Good afternoon, family. My name is Willie, and I am an addict. And I'm going to ask y'all to give me a second to compose myself because I am overwhelmed and honored that this committee would ask a rooftop-dwelling junkie to come to this wonderful city and that y'all would think that I have something to share is still overwhelming to me. Now, some of you sitting out there might have a little bit of difficulty understanding that, but maybe if you hear me, and I know my HP is going to answer the prayer that I sent up, because I asked him to give me the strength and the courage to just go with whatever it is he shakes up out of me. I know I'll be okay. I'm a BC addict. That's before cell phones. So if you're up in here and you ain't turned it off, please note it will distract me. Please take the time to cut it off like they asked. That's number one. BC is also before crack. I am so honored and privileged and overwhelmed with the love you folk have shown me since, and I wear it on my jacket, on my clean date, 9/15/82. Those folk up in here who know me already know I'm fighting the tears. I had asked the chair if it was okay for me to read something. And she said she guessed so. Particularly when I said I'm reading it from our basic text. Check this out, because you know this meeting has two topics. And in the fourth addiction, we're underneath the introduction. Here's what it says. This book is the shared experience of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. We welcome you to read this text, hoping that you will choose to share with us the new life that we have found. We have by no means found a cure for addiction. We offer only a proven plan for daily recovery. In NA, we follow a program adapted from Alcoholics Anonymous. More than 1 million people have recovered in AA, most of them just as hopelessly addicted to alcohol as we were to drugs. We are grateful to the AA Fellowship for showing us the way to a new life. When I got here in 1982, it was somewhat kicking and screaming, meaning I had been hired by the city of New York for a job. Y'all gonna understand some of the tears real quickly. I'm giving it to you right now. 2 weeks ago, I retired from that job. With doctors, psychiatrists, administrators, people I didn't know, think even knew my name, coming up in there saying, "Congratulations on your retirement." The man that came and hired, the man and woman that hired me out of the pool 29 years ago came back to New York to say goodbye and job well done to this rooftop dwelling junkie. A month and a half, almost 2 months after they hired me, they had to send me to treatment. Because they had talked to me about, "Willie, you can't come in here reeking of alcohol." I said, "No problem, won't happen again." And of course we know, something happened to allow it to happen again. Two weeks ago, I retired from a place that they didn't have to keep me employed. With the city of New York, if you screw up within your first 6 months to a year, they can terminate you, no questions asked. You heard me. I didn't hit the two-month mark. She came into the office and she said, "Willie, if you'll go check out if you have a problem, we'll hold your job for you." And I heard myself say something that I was not used to doing to an authority figure. I said, "Okay." I went away to detox. Don't remember a whole lot about it, but I remember that I had a counselor in there that, because I came in with a carton of cigarettes, and we had to go to meetings, and they gave you cigarettes in the meetings, and it was not our meetings that we went to. And one night, because I got tired of people bumming my cigarettes and making my carton dwindle, I came up with the bright idea that I was going to take the cigarettes that they give you when you go to the meeting, and I was going to use that to give out. And he had the bright idea of saying, "Don't give him none, he's got his own." And my illness told me to respond to him. And I told him if he didn't give me what was entitled to me, I was going to whip his ass. You see, that's how I was back then. Let me stop lying. That's how I can get when you cross me. And through his grace and mercy, they didn't throw me out for threatening staff. They discharged me from detox that Saturday morning. That Monday was Labor Day. I went straight to the treatment program that I had been instructed I must attend in order to save my job. I see some identification. I see quite a bit of identification, so I'm not the only one went this route. Thank you, Lord. Check it out. Wasn't ready to stop. But no one has ever been able to say they've heard me use the word relapse in my story. Because I did not relapse. I knew whenever I went into detox what the plan was. I just had to buy me enough time to get these people up off my back, find a way to do it without them knowing I did it, and everything be okay. For me, that's not relapse. That's a plan to continue to do what I was comfortable and familiar with doing. But you heard me, Labor Day was that Monday. I got out that Saturday, and my clean date is the 15th of September. Y'all still with me? Aw, shit now. I drank once more within about another week. But the main thing I want you to hear is, I went to the meetings they told me I had to go to because I wanted to keep my job. Now, I need to back up a little bit and help y'all understand something. I was born and reared in New York, and there was something else here that y'all needed to hear. I hope and pray everybody in here has opened their basic text and read the beginning pages. Check this out. Narcotics Anonymous was formed in July 1953 with the first meeting held in Southern California. The fellowship grew erratically but quickly spread to various parts of the United States. From the beginning, the need was evident for a book on recovery to help strengthen the fellowship. The White Book, Narcotics Anonymous, was published in 1962. That's what we had. We had what we used to refer to as the Little White Book. It goes on to tell you that the Little White Book had some of the basic stories that are in your basic text. And we went to the meetings we were told to go to, and some of the meetings tolerated us. And that's the proper word. They tolerated us. Because there were some meetings that clearly said, the moment you said you were anything other than an alcoholic, you couldn't share. We don't talk about that here.
You can have a seat. You're welcome. Just have a seat back there.
And in a lot of those meetings, when our hand went up, they called everybody around you. You remember Jesse? Jesse, it's good seeing you. You remember Jesse? They treated us like dirt. They treated us like we were the lowest forms of life on this earth. But because we were in, most of the meetings were in churches, they tolerated us. And there was a few old timers that would say things to them like, they have the right to recover too. I kept going to that treatment program, and one of them old timers was a counselor. And one day he asked me, he said, I'd like you to meet me after your groups. I want to talk to you. And he spoke to me about the language that I used. And I'm not talking recovery language. But I talked about some of the things I did. and how I wound up there in treatment. And he said he'd like to introduce me to some guys that he knew that I might feel a little more comfortable and less shunned. And I said, okay. Now, some of you been in treatment centers before, so you know in the day room where they be playing cards or checkers or whatever. So that's what I was doing this particular day when he said he was going to take me to the meeting. And I'm playing cards, and I see him easing out the back. And I'm waiting for him to call me and say, okay, Willie, come on, it's time for us to go. And he doesn't. And he heads for the door, and I know he's leaving. He's got his attaché case, got his coat on. He looked at me, nodded, and kept going. And that side of me kicked in again. I said, oh, this dirty, dirty low-life motherfucker. But I got a trick for him. I remember where he said the meeting was. And I finished playing my hand, got up, went to the subway, and I traveled up into Harlem to the street. I'd be lying to tell you it wasn't emotional because I had not been in Harlem since I had stopped using. And I got off the train at 125th Street. Walked down the street to St. Nicholas Avenue. I used to cop there. And something told me, I remembered something that I had heard in the meetings that y'all said I had to go to. About if you feel uncomfortable, remove yourself. So I got off that block and I started going. And it seemed like every block I turned into, a memory would kick in. And then all of a sudden, I know today it's through his grace and mercy. I turned the corner, and it was the block where the meeting was. And as I turned that corner and looked up the street, lo and behold, if the counselor wasn't standing in front of the church, and I could see him smile like Skippy let loose in Boys Town. And he turned and went back into the church, and I knew some of them feelings that was going on inside of me was conflictual now because he looked like he was glad to see me. I got to the steps. And when I went in, he was at the bottom with about three guys. And he said, this is Willie. This is the guy I was telling y'all about. He hadn't left me. He had planted the seed and he had wanted to see, was I willing? He turned me over to these three wonderful guys. Their stories was like mine. And they knew where there was meetings like this. And it was in a treatment facility right there in Harlem. And he said, one of the guys said, Willie, we was waiting for you. He told us about you. He said, the way you talk, you sound like one of us. I didn't exactly know what that meant at the time. But just the fact that I looked on his face and there seemed to be some joy that I was there. They introduced me to my first NA meeting. We still didn't have a basic text. Then I started hearing people identify that they too had went to a detox, and they named the facility that they had detoxed in where there was also NA meetings. So now I'm aware that there is a fellowship for us, but it's like one of them best kept secrets. Listen, I went and comped dope, and it wasn't that hard to know where to go. Y'all laughing. It wasn't funny then, though. Gentleman who today is my sponsor, he shared with us that he heard of one out in Queens. He had a little green hornet. Y'all remember that car, the green hornet? He used to pile us in there, and he took us out there to Queens so that we could go to a straight NA meeting. But in the meantime, we still had some meetings in the other fellowship that were called two-for-ones. And they tolerated us. And I'm eternally grateful. I'm about to say something that's going to step on somebody's toe. Don't come to me talking to me about it. Talk to your sponsor. You can be all the purest you want up in here. But when somebody comes to you and they got a problem, the way I've been taught it, our job is to be there to help and assist, not to put down or to become the obstacle. And thank God I ran into those kind of people, because, see, y'all don't know, I was the kind of sucker that all you had to do was give me an excuse not to show up or to threaten you with some physical violence, and I was going to take up the task. I felt that bad about me. Did you hear me? I felt that bad about me. It was easier to threaten you than to deal with what was going on in me. And I didn't know this stuff that I'm saying to you now until we got our literature. Because, yeah, I could sit in those other meetings, and I'm not here to bash the other fellowship. But I'm here to say to you and help you understand what it means to me when I'm sitting in a meeting and there's noise and I look at you. See, because I know that I was sitting in a meeting and I heard them sharing some stuff and doing the readings like the people did in the beginning. And I'll never forget going home telling my mother, I said, Ma, them folk know something. And they talk like me. And they tell me I got a shot. She said, and what are you going to do, son? I said, Ma, I want to believe them. She said, then you go back there. It was simple to her. It wasn't to me. That gentleman who became my sponsor many years later, he introduced me to another woman. Some of y'all in Brooklyn probably even forgot her. Her name was Lucy. Lucy was the first person that ever stood in my face and said, Narcotics Anonymous is huge. I lived in California. You would like it out there. Now, listen, I wasn't getting to California because now y'all done took all shot at me getting them them rocks. Let me tell you about my God while I'm sharing this. I got an awesome God. Loves me. And don't forget, And I remember when I was active, I wanted to get to California so I could go into Mexico to get some of that brown dope. Woo! Well, see, my God has a sense of humor, too. Because he afforded me the opportunity to go to California when they had the World Convention in Anaheim. And I did get into Mexico. Didn't get no brown dope, though. But he set it up so that there was no desire to get none when I did get to Mexico. Got a loving God. And that's because of this wonderful fellowship called Narcotics Anonymous. Because, see, by now, I had been shown. By 1983, I'm backing up again. By 1983, we had a basic text that I could look at. My original basic text, I have to go back and I have to go in my basement and dig it out because it was so valuable to me that I was careful where I would take it because the gentleman took the time to bind it for me personally. And that same gentleman couldn't read and write. And he's no longer with us. But if he took that kind of, because we used to help him learn to read, because we used to read the basic text to him at night on the telephone. And one of the greatest joyful moments in my recovery was when there was a group anniversary and Tommy M. said he would read the history of our group. And he got up there unprompted with no help, and he thanked everybody who had helped him learn to read over the telephone, and he told the whole group that people would tell him, he knew how to mark off a paragraph, and he knew how to take some basic words, but if he hit a word that he stumbled over, you were on the other end of the line, and you could help him pronounce it, spell it, and understand it. That's the power that came out of this book called our basic text. And when I used to hear them do the readings, I knew there was something going on. Didn't know what. So when we finally got our basic text, you couldn't tell. This is my Bible. If you're up in here and you're new, welcome home. If you're up in here and you're struggling, stick your hand up. Yes, I know what I'm about to say. And challenge one of us who claim to be grateful to show it. You're damn right I'm right. Because this gift, this unconditional gift, in my opinion, has a price. Each one teach one. I don't care if you're white, black, green, or yellow. Because I'm going to give you another piece of history about this text. I remember in the 60s, when I was using hard, and one of the fellas said to me about, this was when NA was in New York. He said, you want to go with me to a meeting? I said, the meeting for what? He said, they'll help you stop shooting dope. I said, I don't need no help to stop shooting dope. I can stop anytime I want. I just don't want to stop yet. That in and of itself was a lie. The other part of it was, I told him, I don't volunteer to go to jail. You see, another thing you need to know is, like they said, it started in 53, and by 62 it was spreading worldwide. But the city I come from, which is called New York City, we had a governor. We had a governor who had a thing for us. And he created a law. And that law said that any two documented known addicts who were within certain proximity were in the process of commencing to commit a crime. I was documented. My bus had made me documented. Because they couldn't take me straight to jail without stopping and getting me a shot of methadone for my habit. Otherwise, I was going to puke up all over the paddy wagon or in the back seat of their car. And they knew it. I was going to do it intentionally sometimes. Maybe hoping they'd throw me out. Never happened, but. So they, part of that law stated that if you were documented, documented meaning you had already copped out to a drug offense, you had tracks, which I did, both parties' shoes fit. You hear in the readings where they talk about we are under no surveillance? Y'all better understand where that came from, because we were back then. Undercover cops, narcotics cops, they'd have your picture and they'd be sitting outside where there was a so-called known Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And if they seen Willie walk down them steps and they knew there was another documented addict up in there and they had a warrant for him or they wanted to question him about anything, they now had an additional charge on him. Violation of the Rockefeller Law. Which automatically you was guilty because you was a documented addict and you had got in close proximity to another documented addict. And the concept was you could not be up to any good. Now, this is still America. I thought you had to have a trial before you was found guilty. But not when that was going on. And there's many a person that we saw taken away, and we would hear later on, you heard about so-and-so? We know what happened. They picked him up. He was in one of them meetings. So I quickly learned not to go to the meetings because I knew I was documented. Through his grace and mercy, in spite of all those trials and tribulations, look at where we're at today. The lady at the check-in counter shared something with me last night and reminded me. Check this one out. The state of New Jersey followed through with it for quite a while. The charge was called internal possession. If you were under the influence, they could arrest you and charge you just for being under the influence. You ladies, listen up. There's many a lady that went to the penitentiary because she was under the influence and she didn't even know she was pregnant yet. But they charged her being under the influence, and what is that when you endangering a minor? Let me try to help you understand why this thing here is so important to me. I don't know about anybody else in this room. I'm talking about me. Check this out. We rolled in here Thursday. You didn't see a bus on the street. You hardly saw traffic. But you started seeing the signs, welcome the initials of this convention. Every year without fail, this town opens itself up to us. You heard him last night say, I think he said 100,000 have been during the course of time. Check this out. Every year they open this town up. It's off season, but when they know we coming, they start calling and telling people, you got to come to work. You got to come to work. Them folk is coming. I don't know about any of you, but I remember coming from a place where I felt that big because I couldn't get on the subway with short sleeve shirt because of my tracks. Here we are in a resort. I looked on my door, it said $388 per night. God damn! You know how many bundles of dope that is? And let me not leave you crackheads out. Do I need to tell them, Larry? Them $2, $5 hit motherfuckers. Well, check this out. Check this out. This resort opens itself up to us carte blanche. And you and I, yeah, I'm taking y'all inventory right now. You and I know a few 24s ago, they'd have heard somebody say, them addicts coming to town. They'd have started nailing stuff down. Come on now. I retired 2 weeks ago. I worked the same hospital I was born. 63 and a half years ago is where I retired 2 weeks ago. I keep telling you about my God. He brought me back full circle to the place my mother had spit me from her womb for him to get another shot at remolding me. And I am so grateful. The people at my job asked me before I retired, could I get them one of these? They're squares. Yeah, I worked in the field. Most people who worked in the field, most squares were told as part of their getting in to get to read the big book. Ladies and gents, get emotional again. My God has seen fit that they're asking for this now. Because ain't no straight drunk going up in treatment. That's what you call a dinosaur. A straight drunk. Don't touch nothing else. Where? Even if it's sleeping pills, straight drunks have crossed over. I go back and do volunteer work there, and I'm really educating my former colleagues. They are so enthused. They asked me, why do the clients respond to me and they don't respond to them in the same way? And I had to share with them, we have a book that every now and then I would take it into groups and read a little bit of stuff to them, and the bells would go off. they realized that there was some place for us. When I first came around, that wasn't the situation. We had the little white book and we read it and passed it on to one another and we did what we could do. Why did I say that about the purists? It's because it's real simple. It's okay for you to be locked and loaded on what works for you. That's what works for you. But please don't pass your misgivings on to somebody else. What I always shared with my clients, I still stand by. I'm obligated to let you know where you can go. What you then do is on you. Check this out. Jesse remembers. We the meeting we used to go to up there in Harlem. Thank God for them people tolerating us. But they directed us the way to go. And they didn't take nothing away from us when they see. My second sponsor was from the other fellowship. And when he no longer saw me, he heard I had moved to Brooklyn, that I was doing all right. He asked somebody and they told him, he's making them other meetings. Check out what he said. I knew he was all right because we taught him well. If you ain't got something good to say about the person, don't, please don't. Please don't. If there's anybody up in here who's struggling, your job is to show up at a meeting and tell us your struggle. You no longer have the excuse that you don't know what to do. We make it simple for you. Show up at the meeting, whatever's going on, grab somebody that you feel comfortable with, share it with them. They might not have an answer, but their job now is to direct you to somebody who can guide you. I am so grateful that that's what was done for me. I did not see me being this age. I didn't. Those fiends that I knew didn't live in the 60s. You're looking at and listening to an addict who used to. People thought I was a good-hearted soul because I was there when the guy OD'd. Trying to bring him around. Long enough for him to tell me where he got it from. Then I let him go. It was somebody else's job to bring him to. I had to go cop. I got the information I needed. See, I hear all that identification. Y'all call it laughter. Once I got hold of this and I went to reading it, my mother, God bless her soul, I said, Ma, you ain't gonna believe the things them people say in there. She said, like what, son? See, because by now, y'all had dope-fiended me into going to a business meeting. And I sat there, and y'all was going through all these changes about what to do with the money. I knew what to do with it. But none of y'all ever called me stupid, threw me out the meeting. You just encouraged me to continue participating. And please make sure you be back to the next meeting. And I'd go home, I'd say, Mom, them folk is crazy. They need me there. They don't know how to organize nothing. She said, well, what did you... She asked me, well, what happened when you told them that and they didn't vote for it? They told me to keep coming back. She said, well, then you go back there. Through his grace and mercy, through our literature, and through some of the most wonderful folk I have ever met on this earth, I've retired from a job of, I'm coming up on 29 years, I would have been there. I'm on payroll way into August. That's how much time I had. Whew. They have to pay me till August before I can even start getting my pension. And each and every one of y'all play a part in that, because there were some days that I did what y'all told me to do when I didn't have faith or belief that it would work out. That's what I was sharing with you, Larry, when I told you, don't say nothing to her. Y'all gave me in here something. I'm going to share this. It's going to step on some toes. Some people are going to find, have a problem with it. Talk to your sponsor. People said sayings like, there ain't no book about manhood. That's a damn lie. There's no directions. That's a damn lie. When you start getting into the spiritual principles that's in the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous, my belief is that you grow up or you go. Now, if you choose not to grow up, you're going to go, but prior to you leaving, you're going to cause yourself so much more emotional harm. Because this tells me what to do. I don't like all of what it tells me sometimes. But it does give me guidance. On any given day, I can bump into somebody that can promote controversy and I can want to get into locking ass with them. I'm 63 and a half. I'm too old to lock ass. So I know my next tendency is to reach for something to hit them with. I can go to jail for that too. And I'm too old to go to jail. So I have to use this stuff. If you're in here and you're new, welcome home. If you're in here and you're struggling and you're trying to figure out, will this work for you? I'm going to share this and shut up. I remember going home one night, talking to moms, and I said, Ma, them folks seem to have the answers for everything. And when they don't seem like they know what else to tell me to do, they just tell me keep coming back. She said, have they given you any bad information? I said, no, Ma. She said, have you got busted since? I said, no, Ma. She said, have you shot any dope? I said, no, Ma. She said, you drank any wine? I said, no, Ma. She said, you ain't had to go to no methadone programs no more. I said, no, Ma. And she said, what is that other name you call it? I said, spitback. She said, you drank any of that? I said, no, Ma. She said, well, then you keep listening to them people. Mary Magdalene Tomlin, my mother, when I started going to meetings, I had to do that to get into her house. When my mother passed May 27th, 1999, I had keys to everything she owned. She had made sure my name was on every policy she had. I looked at the papers and read where she had changed beneficiaries multiple times because of my active addiction. And once I had gotten into recovery and you wonderful people had helped me stay the course, she had changed. She had put my name back on them policies and never had to worry about removing it, and insisted on me going with her to her bank and putting my name on her accounts. And the week she went to be with HP, she said to me, "You're a good son." And for that, I'm eternally grateful to you here in Narcotics Anonymous. This basic text. And I give you the same thing I tell my family, meaning my NA folk back in Brooklyn, New York. If you ever see me anywhere and it looks like my behavior is stepping off line, you have my permission to walk up to me and put me in check. Because I have an illness that gives less than two damns about how much clean time I have. I have an illness that wants me to play Big Willie and forget I have an illness called addiction. If you ever lose sight that the reason we have this is because we have an illness called addiction, just calling it alcoholism is too minute, minuscule. Oh, shit, I'm using words I didn't use before. And that's because y'all taught me that it was all right to sit down and learn how to speak English. Because when I was active, conversation was, who got it? How much? Can I get 2 for 10? Y'all taught me how to string a whole bunch of words together and use a whole sentence. Go get credentials at the state of New York and internationally they recognize me for. And if y'all don't think there's power in this, keep selling yourself short and don't pick it up. The best gift you can give somebody that doesn't have one is a basic text. And the longer you stay around them, you might be able to coerce them into going and get the step working guy and getting busy. Thank you for letting me share.